Game of Thrones, guys. It's time we throw our garbage on the pile of this shit fest.
Yeah, we had to take a bit of time to collect our thoughts because the rage, the disappointment.
It's like waking up as a somebody who's had a coma.
It's delicious.
And you need time to absorb it all. Anyway, it's me, Game Goblin, as usual with my co-host.
Darth Blasphemous.
Moniker, the Contrarian.
And special guest from the Phil and Friends podcast.
Go fuck yourself. I'm Russ.
Welcome to Blunt Force Gamers, and the first one to drop an F-bomb is our special guest. That's great.
It's going to be a fun episode today.
Oh, it is. It's going to be a great episode. So, we have a lot of vitriol and rage in our system still, so we're probably going to do like 30 minutes and then take a break to recompose ourselves and then get back to recording the second half because there is so much to cover in this. So, for our audience, Game of Thrones coming up. Intro!
Blunt Force Gamers.
You are whatever muddies the white.
I'm killing Steve Shives.
I am so blue ball on fucking EA right now.
It means hold on, fuck.
Pay me rent, bitch.
Hey! I paid for a 2-liter, you fucker!
3, 2, 1. Ready?
Hello. Feeling tired at the gaming table? Unsure if your game needs inspiration? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you. Now there's a podcast untamed by political correctness that may bring your game some added invigoration, whether it is video gaming, tabletop gaming, or card gaming. Each episode may contain unusual amounts of truth, logic, opinions based on personal experiences, half-assed insights, and random bullshit. The BFG podcast is not recommended for children under 18, nor for children over 18, and is not suitable for those who are nursing, pregnant, recently pregnant, or for those who can get others pregnant. Each episode may also contain crude and or puerile humor of a racist, sexist, nihilist, ableist, jingoist, ageist, or fatalist commentary. Warning! Excessive listening to the podcast may cause the following conditions: tremors, sweating, facial twitching, premature ejaculation, pustulant tumors, nausea, headaches, dizziness, swelling in the left kneecap, lucid dreaming, daydreaming, night terrors, involuntary convulsions, a condition known as sausage fingers, spontaneous rectal combustion, autoerotic asphyxiation, an unusual desire to befriend parasitic space monsters, Bigfoot sightings, and uncontrollable facepalming. Lactation is known to occur in both men and women. Do not listen to BFG if you suffer from any of the following conditions: social justice whining, passive-aggressive hippie syndrome, high-speed battles with a Nexus 6, table-flipping rage quitting, or diagnosed as having no sense of humor. Ask your doctor if asking your doctor is right for you.
You're gonna make me start this one, aren't you, Blasphemous? Because I backed you into a corner the other week and just ranted for, like, what, 3 hours?
Yeah, well, it was less of a rant and more of a back and forth, I find. But since apparently we're just Game Goblin and the Yes Men, I think I'm gonna start this off.
Oh, you went there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Fatty.
Fuck you.
All right, go for it, man, dude. It's just, ouch.
All right, as someone who didn't watch the show at first, because I was a poor college student, couldn't afford HBO, couldn't afford the downloads, couldn't even afford a computer to pirate this shit off of, I didn't get into it. Then I move up here. Lo and behold, they get to season, I think it was 5 by the time I made the decision to read the books. Well, okay, listen to audiobooks because I don't have that much time to read these days and I'm dirt slow.
I can say that. There's nothing wrong with audiobooks, man.
Yeah.
I get half my books that way.
But, you know, as the resident retard, you know, I can say that word. It's my people. you know, it was easier for me and I was able to do it on the go, at work, driving, what have you. The big thing is, I got into the deep lore of it. I didn't just listen to, you know, A Storm of Swords, all that, all the books, you know, Dance of Dragons, whole nine. I went through and found the Extended Universe book, and all this stuff that is the legit canon, so I have a pretty good idea of what's going on. And when I watched the show, I was like, yeah, this is alternate version, TV show, can't do everything, yada yada. But I gotta say, they royally fucked that last season. No one cared. We had a fucking coffee cup in there, fucking 2 water bottles. Someone had a pic of I'm not sure if it was like an offshoot thing, but Arya with her shades, and then when she tries to stash them, I guess, you can see them in on the costume. But, you know, it's one of those things where they built up all this stuff where they easily could have got three seasons out of it, made everything as epic as possible. And I'm not talking about the fairy tale ending of, ooh, John and her get married and they have kids, yada yada. No, I don't care about that. I care about how in season 8, they took all these three-dimensional, developed, you know, characters who had gone through many changes to turn them right back into two-dimensional cardboard cutouts.
Slanderizing,
in other words. You know, it's not the... God damn, just so much hate. Anyway, it looks like, you know, looking at this from a game master point of view, like if we're running a game, and I have a shitload of NPCs, and I use my normal NPC tricks, and I write down a few key factors to what makes a good NPC. You know, like, so, such and such NPC is loyal, they're courageous, but, you know, at the same time, they're a little bit too much of a lech. You know, they're, every time you go to a fucking whorehouse, that NPC, the courage and honor and all that shit goes out the window for Poo Nanny. And you spend 8 seasons developing this character and making them, you know, even cooler and three-dimensional. And then when the players sit at the table again, you're like, no, I'm just going to go off the baseline that I originally wrote for this NPC back when we started 8 years ago. Like, Jamie running back to Cersei was just, what?
Yeah, especially after all that character development of him actually having remorse and having basically his ego taken away when his sword hand's removed and trying to come back and just be a good person. The humanity he had when his daughter died in his arms, a true innocent, the only true innocent in the fucking show.
One of two?
Who was the second?
I would have to say the other would be Crispy Shireen.
Oh, true.
I got nothing.
She got invited
shit.
To a barbecue for Stannis' invasion.
Yeah, a pre-victory party.
Yeah, it was a pre-victory party. It was tailgating to the extreme.
But, you know, they had a lot of that character development, and they just threw it out the window, and I felt it was lazy story writing. Yes, we've got multiple endings. We'll get to see when the box set comes out. But you know what? I was reading an article recently.
You can read, guys.
They're like, oh my god, there's an alternate ending where Bran's the bad guy, and the picture is like just a stock image of Bran, but with blue eyes. And I'm like, wait, he wasn't the bad guy in this? Well,
People have been photoshopping Bran like that for years.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy that, I think it was season 5, maybe 4, like, they show him for only a couple of snippets and forget about him for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
That's how important he was to the story.
But he's the main character, which I want to bet on that, because I said Bran's the main character. Years ago. And that's a big thing because...
Yeah, well, that's okay until Bran meets the next Kingslayer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Stairs.
Circular stairways.
but yeah, I think besides letting me get my vitriol out, let's throw it out to somebody else.
The big thing for me, looking at this from the perspective of a game master who's been running games almost as long as The Simpsons has been in syndication. Yeah, I know.
I don't even have anything on that.
That's what, 30 years?
I remember watching it on the Tracy Ullman show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Old man. So yeah. We get the curmudgeon-y old man perspective now.
Yeah, exactly. The curmudgeon old man perspective. Back in my day.
When he's done with this, folks, he's going to go yell at some kids to get off his lawn.
When Sword and Sorcery always included at least one scene of a topless woman shaking her titties in a bar. Thank you, Conan. Looking at it from the perspective of a game master... I am mind-boggled just beyond comprehension that they would de-evolve all of the main characters. If we took this down to the Stark family were the primary NPCs. A lot of the other main characters are the main players, you know, with their character sheets and stuff. And the Starks are the NPCs. That ending right there is probably the worst ending a storyteller could drop on his players. Like, the one NPC everybody loves. No, you're going back north above the wall to go sit in the cave with Tormund. You know, have some sexy time or whatever. But the rest of them wind up in positions of leadership. And by the way, your characters, fuck them. Just screw your characters.
Well, yeah, not having watched the series really and just recap season 8 and everything in preparation for this. What I got out of it, looking at from, like you said, a gaming perspective, is it feels like a DM who lost interest in his campaign. And instead of talking to the players about it, I'm like, look, guys, this isn't doing it for me anymore. Let's kill it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, last four episodes were like a GM Skyping it in.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is it feels like a GM who instead of doing that, I was like, I'm going to end the campaign now instead of flushing it out, so I'm just going to rush through a total party wipe and then hand wave the ending.
Yeah, rocks fall, everybody dies, but in this case it's the Red Keep.
Yeah.
I think, and only one other YouTuber that I know of, and a shout out to Nerdotic because he's put out a lot of quality content in the interim, same as Dictor Van Doomcock. But only one guy has really seemed to hit the nail on the head, and I don't want to say it was Jeremy from Geeks and Gamers because I doubt it was him. Yeah, I've been watching a lot of these guys just blow out, dude. The amount of blowout is phenomenal. But the one that really got me is if this was a role-playing game published by Wizards of the Coast or Palladium Books or Steve Jackson Games or any of the other big ones, you know, it's a household name at this point. What gets me is the amount of investment they shit on. If it was a role-playing game, we are the gamers who buy the dice, we buy the mechanical pins though we don't use them, we buy the books, we get the expanded lore, we go to YouTube to get all of the information and deeper things into the game system and series itself, the lore, and then that's a lot of investment. For those who have been with Game of Thrones in Season 1 or Season 2 when it started to pick up steam, these are the people who sat around and wasted an entire afternoon watching lore videos or picking up special edition books. They bought the books, they bought the dice, they get all this shit, they talk to their friends about it. There is a massive amount of investment on a personal side. This is like a person who plays fantasy sports. They know all the stats, they know all the figures, and then like the guy running the fantasy sports league logs in and says, no, we're going to use all these made-up characters now. We're going back to Season 1 stats before that guy was an MVP. Sorry. It just shits all over the investment. And when people are invested so much in something, just to turn around and say, yeah, it sucks now.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Ford putting out, you know, for a car nut. You know, they put out a new Challenger every year. And they just keep getting better and better. And then they put out a Challenger in the last year. And you look at it and you're like, this is a Ford Pinto with a... It's not even a Challenger, dude. And the
second you said Challenger, I was waiting. He's going to drop the Pinto.
Yeah, I'm going to drop the Pinto because they love this. Kaboom. But, yeah, you get to where I'm going with this. You know? And when you look at the car, you're like, no, this is not a Challenger. This is a piece of shit hatchback.
Yeah.
And the auto manufacturer's like, well, let me explain to you why this is a good car. And you're like, no, this is not a good car. D.B. Weiss and Benioff, fuck you guys. They told this story, and they're like, it's a good story. And I'm looking at the story, and I'm like, no, it's not. And millions of other people are looking at it. You can't convince me it's a good car, or a good story, or a good sports team. When I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is trash.
So the people who fucked up, they're defending their little garbage pile? Is that what's happening?
They're totally defending the garbage pile.
So it's like the meta-narrative equivalent of show, don't tell. They're telling you it's a good story instead of showing you a good story.
Exactly.
That's between this and The Last Jedi, this is becoming an alarming norm in a lot of kind of geek cultures. You know, spend all this time getting all these characters developed and then just shit on it and then blame the fans saying, oh, you don't get it.
Fancy you should mention that because D.B. Weiss and Benioff, fuck you guys.
Fuck you guys.
They're moving on to Star Wars.
They are?
Yeah.
Eat a dick. They can eat a dick.
And it's gotten to the point where, and thanks to the wonderful guys and gals when I do the video at r/freefolk, because when I do the video of this, I'm going to just throw in a shitload of dank memes. They're getting pissed. And even the Star Wars fans, because, you know, people talk to each other across boards. Even the Star Wars guys are like, no, we don't want them. They were excited at first, but now that they've seen the train wreck of Game of Thrones, they're like, no, our lore has been screwed up enough. Fuck these guys.
Well, and when you're talking about the issue with, you know, Star Wars and now Game of Thrones with the shitty fallout and all this stuff, I think that's actually almost something that is developing as a result of it becoming mainstream. As nerd culture steps into the forefront of everything, we're going to get more of this because we're producing more, and the numbers games just say we're kind of fucked as far as the stuff we love getting the representation we want it to have, because they're trying to appeal to so many people that they're going to throw the dice and they're going to roll shitty ones.
And the weird, sad part is when gaming culture first started stepping out into the limelight, this was about 2000 when Dungeons & Dragons 3.0 hit, there was actually like legitimate stores here in Seattle that had gaming all over the place. You could go visit the WotC store in Northgate. You could go down to the University District and play in tournaments.
Oh,
nobody batted an eyelash, and I'm kind of missing being able to, like,
we
walk
had
in.
A WotC store here in Everett.
Yeah, we had one here in Everett. I do miss, though, walking in and, like, accidentally dropping a magic card and hiding that fucker, like, really fast. Like, I was carrying a gram of Coke or some shit. It's like, I don't want to get my ass kicked. I better hide that mana.
Yeah.
Because at least back then, the game wasn't as corrupted by mainstream.
Yeah, I think just from my perspective, it's along the same lines, but it's a little different. Like, for me, growing up, you know, like, loving action figures and shit like that, the amount of times I would spend online looking for, like, you know, Samus Aran or, like, Link or something to that effect of action figures, and you could only get them through Japan, you know, and they would be, like, upwards of $90. Something that 10-year-old little moniker doesn't have. And then now I just go to Target and they have like little 6-inch figures of Samus and Mario and all that shit. And I'm just like, this, it feels surreal, you know?
It does.
Like the first ever like thing I got that I would consider like geek merchandise was the first time I went to Los Angeles. Blasphemous, maybe you can help me out here. What's the name of like that, the really old street down there? Is it like Alvera Street or something like that? Like the really old historical, like Hispanic street where they have like the old school markets and all that.
Sorry, bro. Those are Californians. I'm a New Mexican.
Okay.
Just saying, we're better.
There's a level of legitimacy there that you got to take into account.
Yeah, there is a difference.
Okay.
You know, between the different cultures, it's very much like the difference between, I don't know, season 8 versus season 1.
Or the difference between Bosnians and Croatians and Serbs.
True, true.
I actually saw what the average Croatian looks like the other day. I'm, wow, holy shit.
Well, I'm going to get all of a shot. So before that happens, what I was saying is the first piece of geek merchandise, it wasn't officially licensed, I don't think, but they had these little homemade, like, Mario characters, like little plushes. And I got Luigi and my brother got Donkey Kong. And we thought that was just the coolest thing ever, you know?
And see, that's an investment, like the point I made earlier about Game of Thrones. Yeah. You guys are buying all this geek culture shit. I mean, what happens, you know, when Nintendo says, oh, we're releasing a new Mario game, you look at it. Is a complete dumpster fire, and you guys are like, this is nothing like the lore that you guys have built up in the Mario world.
What about Fallout 76?
What about Fallout 76?
Well, see, I think Nintendo could get away with that, especially considering their thing for inconsistencies.
True.
Like, if we want to talk about the Zelda timeline, we're going to be here for a couple hours, my friend.
Well, all right, so you guys, let's get back on topic here, because okay. I'm sure the audience wants to hear more about us spitting on Game of Thrones, which I don't have enough saliva for.
How about we just spend the next...
You two, okay. You were not really that invested or familiar with the series at all.
No.
We talked about this pre-show. So, you guys caught up on it by watching some YouTube snippets. They were 3-minute...
Yeah, I found some 3-minute recaps of each of the episodes.
Okay. So,
Suds episode 4.
I just watched like a 20-minute full recap.
Okay, so from your point of view, from what the author had to say... What questions were you left with? What came up that watching this going, you know, from a gamer's point of view, is this like a hot mess or is it something that a normie would be like, whatever, shrug?
So I think that first off, I have to preface by saying, as you know, members of nerd culture and really invested in everything, we tend to get more invested than the average person. So I think for the average viewer who this is just a show that they've been watching, and yeah, they're invested in it, but not the way people like you and me get in,
yeah,
probably a fine ending. They're going to be like, it wasn't as strong as I'd hoped, but they're going to be like, fine with it. For people like us, though, I could see where like that character felt really minor just looking at the recaps, and now he's the leader of everything.
Or how Tyrion went from an all-star who was playing 4D chess constantly to, duh! Don't know what's going on. Everything I say is dumb.
Yeah, they pointed that out in the recaps that he's not as all clever as he was before, and which is same because from what little I have seen, he was the character I really liked.
Yeah, same here. Like to me, it looks like they almost pulled a Princess Leia with him, where at first he was, you know, just kind of this suave, you know, quick-witted dude who had all the answers and could give a little sass to back it up, and now he's just standing around, just kind of he's not being proactive or he's not being an instigator, he's just reacting, and he's really meek and humble, and it's like, the hell happened?
Yeah, what the hell happened? He did go to a reactionary, you know, just stuff would happen and he would react instead of being the guy who would instigate and push the narrative along further.
But there's more to that. When you, even from the books or what they showed in the show of when he was on trial in the not the Reach,
You mean in the Ares?
Yeah, when he was there in the Vale, yeah, and he was being, you know,
yeah, the Ares.
He was kept in a sky cell and all that. He did play that in a reactionary role, but he kept thinking moves ahead. But it's one of those things where I could see it from a character development stage where, you know, he came in big dick swinging, yada, 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 to the point where he just got overwhelmed because a bunch of the decisions he made backfired on him really big. So
big dick, little fist swinging.
You know, actually, talking about Tyrion so much, it does bring me to another point I wanted to make, because I've got so many things I want to say. I don't think an hour would cover it. I don't like actors. You guys know this. Our audience. Oh, my God. See, I'm even gurgling hate now. The actors, normally I don't like actors, especially here in the States, because they just get so bent on themselves. And the actors for Game of Thrones, they got some really humble motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And Tyrion is a little dude. We all know this. Mm-hmm. It's pretty fucking obvious he's a midget or a dwarf or whatever the politically correct word is for small people. But holy shit, this guy came in out of left field, and unlike Warwick Davis or Deep Roy or other ones, he wasn't dancing around singing lollipops. He was playing a serious role and just had that gravitas.
Yeah.
That he had he has that special thing that he can play the role and just fucking nail it.
Well, dude, it's like the first time I ever saw him as an actor was in Knights of Badassdom, where he fucking dies and then comes back as, what, a god or something?
Yeah, he comes back as, like, some entity to defeat the demon
thing. He was a summons at that point.
He was a summons. Yeah.
Which, by the way, great movie. I love that movie.
But yeah, and it's great because we got friends who, you know, their friends were in it because they're part of that whole boffer sword thing. It's not my jazz. But to see him in that role where he was just like, I'm just always high and we're doing all this shit. I love weapons. Yeah. And then he gets killed and then he comes back as like total badass. I was like, all right, this guy's kind of cool. But to see him play Tyrion or to see him in, what was it, X-Men, not Origins, First Class?
No, it was Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past. There we go. Good thing we got a Marvel guy because DC is superior.
Besides the point. No, DC is superior. I just like to know what I'm arguing against.
Exactly. But to see him in that role where he played, again, a serious role. He wasn't comedic relief. He was a bad guy who came in serious, you know, he had reasons of why he was a bad guy. He's a pretty versatile actor. He has another movie where he tries to solve a crime and he's just a guy dealing with mental health issues. I haven't seen it, but it looks amazing. And
a lot of these actors and actresses are actually really phenomenal. They raised the bar, in my opinion. Emilia Clarke, she came out and had about she had the emotional range of a stump. And, you know, Daenerys Targaryen was about as important to me in the story as, I don't know, a wooden spoon with about the same character depth as a paper plate. Yeah, that was a woman kitchen joke. Get it? But anyway, season... it was really weird, however, though. For the first 6.5 seasons, for the most part, I mean, most of 7, it was like the rest of the show was carrying her. And then season 8 came out, and, like, the final episode... You know, I mean, there was moments there. It was no longer Emilia Clarke playing Daenerys Targaryen. It was Daenerys Targaryen. She just somehow managed to encapsulate that role. And she was carrying the show, like, in the scenes that she was in. Like, her acting range just... I don't know what she did in between season 7 and 8. But she was doing something right. Because when she came back on screen, it was a believable performance.
Well, that's good. That's what we should be singing stuff, you know?
Yeah, she was... a lot of people, there's been a lot of outpouring of love, and I can see why. It's because the role that she was playing, at first it was stiff, it was wooden, it was, at best. But season 8, she was carrying the show for the most part, and while they were just shitting all over the other characters, and a lot of thank yous to the other cast members, even though, again, actors, I'm not the greatest fan of actors, still... The fact that they stuck it out, they did their damn job, they did it well, while the people who were in charge of the whole damn operation were screwing around. These guys, that was a hell of a lot of professionalism to do the job to the very last day to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
Even though the people who were giving out orders were about as competent as my manager back at Pizza Hut.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a thing with them is they had a good cast, but when it came down to the fallout of the final episode, we see them taking one of three stances. You've got your combatives who are trying to defend the directors and the writing and all of that.
It's probably contractual.
Yeah, possibly. You've got the neutrals, which are the vast majority, the silent majority. And then you've got a few who are like, no, yeah, that was total shit.
Even Alfie Allen, who's often overlooked, the guy who played Theon Greyjoy, I fucking hated him. The first couple, few episodes, more his character, I hated him. You know, like, he just didn't really seem to pull it off. But the more I thought about it after, in the aftermath, the fallout of the whole series and stuff, the guy is actually a really phenomenal actor. Like, the whole arc between him and Ramsay Snow, where he plays, he's broken.
Oh, yeah, when he plays Reek.
When he plays Reek, he goes from, you know, cocky guy who's not exactly sure, you know, where he is on the family scale. He plays Reek, and then he comes back as a guy who's trying to do his deal. And the one that kept getting me is, like, usually when they showed him in a scene where it was knees on up, head to knees, you know, he's standing in the background talking to somebody, he's always holding one of his hands in an odd gesture. You know, I'm like, what is he doing, throwing gang signs or some shit? Then it dawned on me a while back that in the back of his mind, he was still playing Reek because, and I totally spaced it out, forgot about it, Ramsay Snow deboned one of his fingers.
Huh.
You know, early on. And so when he's standing there wearing his gloves and he's holding his hand in that weird posture, I'm like, what the fuck? And then it hit me. I'm like, this guy is keeping in mind the tiny little details that we would completely overlook and have forgotten about just by holding his hand in a peculiar manner. That's pretty damn good, in my opinion. You know, just the tiny details.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got Benioff and Weiss, you know, leaving coffee cups laying around.
yeah.
Yeah.
Just say that the mermaid on the Starbucks cup is some long-lost house. You'll be fine. It looks like it, anyway.
House Starbucks?
Yeah, House Starbucks.
They came here after fighting the Cylons?
Yeah.
They won out over the Tullys.
Well played, sir. Well played.
In the last battle with Seattle's best, they came out on top.
Yes, and now they take on their next great competitor.
Actually, speaking about Seattle.
Folgers.
I was actually talking to Russ about this earlier. Despite my suggestions, because Russ is going to start up his new podcast here real soon, so more support to you, bro.
Thank you.
I can't wait to show up guest and drop an F-bomb in your opening segment. Anyhow.
You have to leave it in. No editing it out.
That's right.
The deal.
The one episode we don't monetize.
The one episode you don't fucking monetize. Because I will just... Yeah, I'll say something about your podcast. You'll talk about a game and I'll be like, well, this one time I was fucking my mom. And I realized the story was bullshit. And then I woke up and realized I was fucking my mom and watching Game of Thrones at the same time. And I was like, which one is more horrifying right now? But if we go on the stereotypes of Seattle, everybody is like, oh, it's always cloudy, always rainy here, always dark. And I choose to live here for a reason.
Yeah.
Because 9 months out of the year, if I'm lucky, it is cloudy and gloomy because I am legit medically diagnosed with light sensitivity. I have taken way too many dings to the head. You know, I think Blasphemous, I told him my first concussion was at the tender age of 3 thanks to steel bumper to forehead.
Uh-oh.
That does horrible things to a kid.
Yep. And he's still only 3 apples high.
And I'm still only 3 apples high, so it stunted my pituitary growth. But I've received a lot of dings to the nug. Right? I mean, other than, you know, eating a manhole cover at high speed a few years back. Yeah, that's just an episode in itself of what's been done to my skull with rocks and sticks and pipes and tombstones.
And everything falls into place.
And everything falls into place, yes.
It all makes sense now.
But this has damaged my ocular nerves. So I have lived almost the entirety of my life watching other people out in the field play football and whatnot because I can't do it. It hurts too much. It gives me a migraine. Episode 3 of season 8. Coming from a legitimately diagnosed person who has photosensitivity was too damn dark.
And we had a brand new 65-inch TV, all the lights off, all the, you know, shades drawn. We had it on extra vivid. The brightness was, you know, in perfect balance for it.
And these fuckers telling me I don't know how to operate a TV. One of their excuses, you guys probably haven't heard about this, is after the show aired and people were bitching about it being too dark. And I'm like, these people have 20/20 vision in some cases, or glasses, or have some ability to see in full color. They probably have better visual acuity than I do.
Yeah.
They're pretty fucking legit on this one, because I read by LED and it's too dark. It's just... And the fact that they're like, well, you don't know how to operate your TV was their excuse.
Really?
They were attacking the fucking fans.
Yeah, the people who are invested, the fans, the people who bought their fucking merchandise and watched their show.
So, when I was viewing my recap for that, I very clearly looked at it, and my first thought was, wow, the lighting in this would be great for a moment, but as an episode, it's just garbage. It's all
It wasn't
backlit.
Just one episode. It was an episode and... Almost 2 episodes, like an episode and a half, because they had the night build-up and then the war.
It was 82 minutes? It was some long-ass amount. It was almost an hour and a half.
But yeah, that episode, their use of fire versus just pitch blackness creates really horrible shadows and contrast that hides what you're seeing.
And which brings another problem later on. I mean, of course, we have the visuals, which were... Dude, that was even more of a radio show than this podcast at that point.
See, what they could have done to make it really good is it starts out there really dark, and you see the flaming swords of the Dothraki just going, and you see them just disappear. And then the clouds begin to part, and this big blue moon just shining down as you see these massive hordes of zombies as they're charging at you. And then you see the Unsullied just, you know, getting wiped out by these waves of zombies. Because they basically attack like ants. They don't care about personal space. They're not like, I need to swing my sword. No, they're just like crawling over each other to kill a motherfucker with another motherfucker.
In game terms, that means each of the undead had swarm fighting, which means you can fit four characters to one square on the battle map instead of just one character to a 5x5 square on the battle map.
No, they had greater swarm fighting. It was like 10 in one spot.
It was a crazy-ass amount. But it brings us to another point. After trying to see Episode 3, which Episode 2 was great. I loved Episode 2. Mm-hmm. That was like the crowning pinnacle in this. You get all of the characters together. They have their closure. And for us, the audience, it was a way to say goodbye, you know, because these people may not make it. Then in Episode 3, they kill a bunch of NPCs. Like, one dude we care about and a bunch of NPCs, and as much as I want to love Lyanna Mormont, she became a running joke. She was the exact same character every time they brought her in. There was no growth, no nothing. She just stood up and called people out. That was it. What really gets me is afterwards is the respawning Dothraki and respawning Unsullied. It's like, yes, I understand in game terms Daenerys has the leadership ability. This does not mean that new Unsullied and Dothraki appear out of nowhere to refill the ranks, so her character sheet remains legit.
That's terrible narrative on the GM's part. I mean, imagine how you feel. You've been running through this massive, epic battle. You etched out this victory. You're just most away from celebration. And the GM goes, nope, everything you did, do it again.
Do it again. Of course, there was also the so-called Battle for King's Landing, which was less of a battle and more of a massacre. And I quote Dictor Van Doomcock on this one, or paraphrase anyway, that Daenerys just went up and down each street, Pac-Man style, just walk, 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 walk. and one of the best memes I've seen for that is Jon is talking to Daenerys, and he's like, you know, you killed innocent children and everything. And she's like, well, we liberated them. And the meme shows a map of the capital city and has this big green outline that says, not children, which is all the shit she's burned. And then there's like this little circle over the castle itself, and it says, Cersei. Just kind of pointing out that her target was in this one little circle, that she didn't need to destroy all the rest of it.
Well, you know, that's the moment we realized she turned into Hillary, you know, just start, you know, bombing from the air. Just take them out. All of them.
Oh, so I get it. There was a person down there who was putting out papyrus leaks, and she wanted to drone strike him. So she called in Drogon, her drone strike. She's like, burn the embassy. What street is it on? I don't know. Burn them all. Treat it like Haiti. Just fuck everything up.
The way she died, I mean, in the final episode.
It would have been more poetic if they... Because there was a lot of things they did not fucking explain in that last deal. And it would have been more poetic if they brought in Jon Snow when he stabs her, you know, like, some dialogue beforehand that, you know... Stabbing her in the heart could be like one of the most painful things that somebody could encounter, because he did encounter that, you know, just to add that little extra bitterness to it.
And I mean, the whole thing of like, I'm going to go see Tyrion while he's in jail. Got to take my weapons. I'm going to go speak to the queen. All right, here's your weapons. Oh, I'm going to walk by this giant drift of ash. Oh, it's the dragon. The dragon's just like, no, come on in, buddy. If you need me to hide the body, all you gotta do is tell me.
Oh, and the fucking Mary Sue factor for Arya?
Oh. Yeah, her plot armor in the fucking battle where, you know, hellfire's raining down. You're seeing all these people get eviscerated by, you know, falling buildings and hellfire and Dothraki randomly riding around.
Okay, I understand that they wanted to portray that the whole scene was portraying the sight of how bad war is from the ground level through the eyes of one of the characters. I gave less shits for Arya, because at that point we knew she had, as Blasphemous put out, plot armor. A lot of plot armor. I would have been happier with the redheaded Irish gal that had no name.
Yeah, or even just cut to random citizens, or there's one of the main characters running down the street, and, oh, look, the horrors of war, they barely survive. They're actually hurt, not like, oh, they got a knock to the noggin, but they're still walking around and find the one horse in the town that they could ride.
Ah, yes, the one horse. What does that mean to the story? Nay.
I mean, it was bad. They could have done it from many different characters, and we could have seen more aspects of how it's bad, not just plot armor runs through and survives.
Well, wow. Yeah, and if they had done it from the point of view of, say, a nameless soldier, that's a really powerful tool to use narratively, because now the viewer is that soldier.
Exactly.
You're not following a character. You are experiencing the battle.
Allow me to be a yes man here and say yes to that, because, like I mentioned, the redheaded, I'll just say Irish gal, they show her at the very beginning trying to get in the city to get safe. Then a little bit later, she bumps into Arya like a couple of times or whatever. Again, like you said, nameless soldier. This would be the nameless citizen scenario where she's running through the city trying to survive. But the story is told through her perspective as she runs past the main characters and they're doing their thing. So we still get the story chugging along, but now we're seeing it through the eyes of somebody who's fucking terrified.
And as far as we know, innocent in this situation.
As far as we know.
Hey, don't be bringing up that stuff. Do not be bringing up better narrative options than the standard storytelling that we get in this. Stop it.
Okay, on that topic, actually. As many people know, and last I checked, the petition to remake Game of Thrones reached 1.5 million signatures. Yes, we know this is not going to go anywhere. We also know it's a message. As the Joker would say, it's not about the money. It's about the message. 1.5 million people who are pissed and willing to unsub from a major service is a lot of people.
By the way, it took me 2 extra weeks just to unsub because I had to figure out how.
I don't want to do the math. Because it's like $15 for HBO Go, but 1.5 million people paying $15. I know that's over $10 million somewhere, more than $15 million. I don't know. If I were to say $10 each, then we know it's 10.5 million or some shit.
Can we go back to the Arya leaving the city thing?
Arya leaving the city? Go for it, dude. Oh my God.
I don't know, but I just feel like, I guess maybe for that moment, just from what I do know, as our listeners know, I do not watch the show. She rode off on a white horse, correct? Yeah.
Behold a pale horse.
Yeah. See, I think visually to me, when you see someone, especially a character like Arya, riding out of just total decimation on a white horse, like visually it kind of represents, you know, not just adventure, but also like, I don't know, like a good outcome. Riding off into the sunset, you know.
They could have explained that in any other way, like, the next episode, they find her body. Well, I would have been totally, like, pacified by that. That would have been legit. The whole thing was, like, basically her final thoughts is her leaving the city decimated on the only lone animal there. She rides off on it, and then they find her body inside the city still.
Well, the thing was, she was horrified, right?
Yeah.
I think it would have been better, instead of, you know, riding off on the horse, just have her walk out just slowly, you know. She walks out of the city, you know, just kind of that whole 1,000-yard stare going on. Well, it just slowly, no music, kind of pans out, and you just see her walking.
So I actually have to agree with that, especially since the fundamental issue with the white horse is a white horse for a character is cleansing. You see someone on a white horse, it kind of says they come out of it clean.
Well, there's really two meanings to it, because, sorry to get biblical on you, you can back me up there, moniker. The white horse was ridden by death, right?
Pale horse. The famous one.
But there's the other aspect coming from the Middle Ages where a white horse meant that you were the good guy. You were the person who was on the true and right path.
Yes, and that's kind of what I'm getting at more, because that's the more literary symbolism. Yeah. And since I kind of like to over-glorify myself as a writer, I guess, that's how I approach a lot of things. But
getting back on the whole 1.5 million people petitioning, because we're getting back on the narrative, so bicycles coming around full circle. D.B. Weiss and Benioff and a few other people are like, well, if the fans are so pissed, they can write their own episodes. That wasn't a wise maneuver to make on their part, because people have been, and holy shit, the headcanon is better than what showed up on screen.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many people who put so much years of their lives in the books and following the show and going to every event. And I mean, hell, it's to the point where they have, apparently, now this is a Facebook thing, so I'm not sure it's true, they went and hid actual Iron Thrones around the world, and there's like 6 of them out there four of them have been found, one in England, one in, like, Africa, I don't remember. Like, people who get that invested where there's a giant capture the flag and there's a mystery out there, people who do it in real life. Alrighty then, sorry about the break there, people, we had to refuel and get some of that stress out. Just, Jesus, God.
There's so many things that I want to go on about season 8 that I can't do in an hour.
No, it's probably going to be a little series for you whenever you need a vent now.
Nah, pop culture will move on and I'll still be pissed.
Speaking of moving on, so this whole thing isn't just bashing the failure that was season 8. A big part of this is when it comes to storytelling, we're GMs sitting around the table, mostly and soon to be. So what would you guys say is a good storyteller way to end a game? I know at least one of you knows how to end a game besides flaming cows fall from the sky and everyone dies.
Yeah, well, if this was a role-playing game and it had lasted, you know, to the conclusion of the game, I at least would have opted to have closure. Like we mentioned for a moment there during our break, the biggest problem with the ending was the fact that there isn't closure. You can still go on and make theories as to, like, oh, is Bran the Blood Raven? Or what happens to such and such character afterwards?
Or why did they forget about the moths or butterflies, whatever, that kill people that go to Narth?
Oh, yeah, the fucking butterflies on Narth. So, yeah, goodbye, Unsullied. Yeah, there's just, from a storytelling perspective, if it reached the end game and you got to the very closer point, there needs to be closure. The story has been told. The player should sit down satisfied going, you know, that almost every answer that's possible, major question that could be possible, is answered.
Yeah, I think ambiguity in terms of fate and what happened to some characters in an ending is fine, but when it's the entire, like, main cast, you know, and there is zero closure or any real idea of what they're gonna do now, that's just bad writing.
Or even some of the characters just they did forget about the arcs of a lot of characters, you know. I quote one of my favorite YouTube videos, I fuck them and I leave them because I'm a piece of shit. Yeah, Jamie Lannister there, you know. Some of the lesser characters were really important, like Howland Reed, but he never came back. You know, he's like the one dude who can be like, yeah, I was there, verified. Never comes back, you know. And for some reason, the show developers also seem to forget how medieval fantasy is based off of reality, medieval times.
Yeah.
And that one of the big things that a medieval family would do to maintain power is have lots of fucking babies. And I went over there, a brief amount of math, fuzzy math, of course, just to break it down. And if you go by, you know, heir and a spare, each generation has two kids. The numbers get geometric pretty fucking quick. They're pretty much binary. You start with parents who have two kids, and those two kids go on to have two kids each themselves, and so on and so on and so forth. A lot of these houses in the Game of Thrones setting have been around for hundreds of years, some of them for almost 1,000. That means there are a lot of heirs and a lot of spares. And to just go, oh yeah, Bronn, you're the master of Highgarden. Grats.
Yeah.
It makes no fucking sense.
Like, how was it that all the Baratheons were dead? Like, I know going through the actual extended lore book, there were Baratheon cousins and houses that could trace a stronger lineage. But to just name a bastard... You know?
And they went, like, when Cersei did the purge of all of the bastards, and, you know, the only other Baratheons who were, like, outside the purge were basically Bobby B's brothers. That was it.
Well, there was, in the books at least, there was also a girl who was fathered in Jon Arryn's wedding bed that was, she was the one who was guiding people up and down the mountain. You know, she was a Baratheon bastard, but...
Yeah, a lot of things don't make a lot of sense, especially like some of the royal decrees. Like she wasn't even queen of the Seven Kingdoms, now Six Kingdoms. She legitimizes Gendry. She's still not even crowned. She shows up at the throne. She's basically shown up as a conqueror. She has not been through coronation or any formal recognition whatsoever. But no, she's queen because she showed up and killed everybody. My brain gets the aftermath of a train wreck trying to just figure out how a noble house can start by walking in, just pushing everybody over and going, hey, we rule here now.
Well, it's like Bronn said, all the ancestors of the great houses were just hard bastards making their way. The Lannisters, he literally tricked the Casterlys into either dying or leaving in either way, and there's no more Casterlys. Now, Castle Rock is ruled by Lannisters. From a gameplay perspective, you know, I guess it makes sense for GM to be like, all right, you get your wish or whatever granted. You're now the lord of a house. You know, yeah, it did work that way. If one side lost and they were basically kicked out of their home, someone else would be appointed. But there was so much they could have done there. And it's just like, if this was a role-playing game, and yes, there is a Game of Thrones role-playing game out there.
There's a lot of them, but...
You know, it just doesn't make sense. It's like the GM going, all right, well, you know what? I'm tired of you guys. This has been really fun. I've been paid a lot of money to run game for you guys, but I'm peacing out. So here's a quick end to the story without cows raining down. Like, how what would have been a
Even
better
Even one
ending?
Of the guys at work who's not exactly... Oh, of course, it's a high-tech job. And I use that word loosely because some of the people that work there are not exactly of the high-tech mind that you want to have being made doing precision machining. Anyway, even he figured out that when Grey Worm shows up and he's holding Tyrion there and, you know, he's like, you're not here to talk. They looked at the whole scenario and they're like, Daenerys was never officiated as queen to the people of the kingdom. She was only queen to the Dothraki and the Unsullied. Therefore, he's just a political terrorist. Holding a political prisoner, the rightful heir to the throne. And if you look at the situation in like any other light, you know, like say the Queen of England really gets pissed for some fucked reason and decides now in the year 2019 that America is rightfully to be ruled by the British, shows up and just spanks the shit out of everybody in the White House. She gets ganked for some reason. So like, I don't know who, I'm not familiar with the military over in England, but one of the biggest generals over there says, hey, no. We're going to keep the president captured here, or you know, the secretary of state, whoever, the next in line to be president, according to your laws and traditions, but you can't have him back. Not until Britain's demands are made.
Met, but yeah.
Or met, made, whatever. Just you look at it, it's just a giant act of political terrorism, and what the fuck?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, let's send John back beyond the wall because it's going to pacify the Unsullied. Hello? This is a perfect time for Sansa, who's been basically tutored by one of the most masterful manipulators that anybody's ever seen in the land. She'd have been like, oh, yeah, sure, lol, we'll send them back north, bye-bye. He sails off, and they're like, we were just joking, John. Get back over here.
I mean, that's a meme, dude.
It's a meme now. You know, and, of course, you know, sitting right next to her sister, you know, Arya, plot armor, Mary Arya Sue.
Yeah.
Yeah, Arya Sue. She's sitting there, and fucking, she's learned for, like, an entire season and a half how to lie to people. She could say anything she wanted to, and make as long as, yeah, it's believable, whatever.
Yeah, her charisma buff was insane, you know?
Yeah, she's got major charisma bonuses going on, some traits and feats in that area. She can tell whatever lie she fucking wants to.
I just think it's funny that everyone got pissed off that she got a nude scene. That's funny.
No, we got side boob.
Yeah, that was it.
And that's another problem with season 8 / season 7 to a degree, is like the writers and producers took a knee to social media outrage. And people are like, why is there so much nudity? Hello?
Because it's a story meant for mature adults?
Well, not
and
just that.
And beyond that, it falls into the historical thing. You think of Rome, you think of these people in, oh, these togas and these robes. Nah, dude, harlots out in the street were, you know, open-shirted, just like, hey, coming by.
Yeah, there was a lot of fucking going on. It's the same point. It's a visual representation that the morality and the casual regard that they take to such adult things separates their world from our world entirely. And then when you bend the knee to social justice warriors going, yeah, we'll get rid of the nudity.
You know, I think we need to stop with this whole social justice warrior title, because by calling them social justice warrior, that makes it sound like they actually have a legitimate thing they're fighting for, something that should be taken seriously. When
so
it's
they're
not
more like social justice rogues.
No. I think social justice
barbarians, because they're uncivilized.
No.
I, as a logic legionnaire, will destroy them.
No, the logic legionnaires are born.
No. Barbarian. That makes them sound too badass. I would just go with something with the subjectively indignant.
That's why we call them NPCs.
The social justice squires.
But social justice suggests that. Well, you know, they're actually after...
That would have been true a couple of years ago,
yeah.
But due to the tirades these people go on all the time, I think, they have so badly dragged down the term of social justice warrior that it has become almost like a negative statement now.
Yeah, that's what it was meant to be. It was meant to both be humorous, to depower them, and, you know, it's something to be laughed at, like, oh, you're a social justice warrior?
Well, yeah, but like with most things, for
tell
a while
me of
you
your
try
battle
to wear it.
Beyond the wall, there, social justice warrior. How many undead have you fought?
quoting Max Gilardi here, but becoming a keyboard warrior and screaming at people via Twitter does not make you an altruist. It just makes you kind of a retard.
Okay, so Game of Thrones bent the knee to the SJWs. It was obvious. And I still like, and despite the fact that I'm in a love-hate relationship right now with Gurr, also known as George R. R. Martin, but I'm just going to call him Gurr because it's more appropriate. Like, whee! Worm could hide the tuna! Gurr, during one of his interviews, actually, it was funny because they called him out. They were like, hey, you know, what is this white savior thing you're doing with over in Marine with the Khaleesi? You know, you got all these brown people holding up a white girl and she's crowd surfing. They're all cheering her. This is total white savior stuff. And it was so hilarious, you know, in his standard fashion, just sitting there being calm and fat and old. He's like, well, we put out a casting call in Morocco. And as it turns out, when you're in Morocco and you put out a casting call to anybody who to show up and be an extra in your TV series, it turns out you get a lot of Moroccans.
Right.
That's just kind of the thing is, like, they've tried to do this shooting on location where they can. Doing all the stuff and just putting it out there to try and get all these different people to come in. And guess what? That's the way it falls. People choose to take those roles.
I have never seen so many Irish actors.
And don't forget the Scottish.
And Scottish actors doing a job all at the same time. Because usually an Irish actor, they pull in like one or two in a movie because, you know, budget concerns. And like, we need a decent Irish actor, you know, cheap. Okay, we'll just bring in that one over there, put him on screen because, you know. It's like what George Lucas did with Star Wars. You know, instead of hiring American actors, you know, he could get three British actors, throw them in stormtrooper armor for the price that he could do for one American actor. So it's cost effective as shit. And, you know, a lot of these, and in a weird sort of way, you know, I never really paid much attention to the Irish acting community or the British community acting, just any of those communities over there, because, of course, it's over the pond. But a lot of these guys, man, they really brought their A game, and the fact that they were able to stay so humble with so many bright lights and their names up in the air for everybody to see.
In Game of Thrones.
In Game of Thrones, which...
worldwide phenomenon.
The crazy part is that everything off screen, except for fuck you, D.B. Weiss, fuck you, Benioff, except for those two and a little bit of Gurr, I have almost nothing bad to say behind the camera. Everybody brought their A-game. From the costumers, makeup artists, the visual effects people. I only, like, when Drogon burned down the throne, that was, like, the only really super obvious green screen scene that I actually saw, like, the artifacts on the edges.
Oh, yeah.
Well, think back to the early seasons when they killed Daenerys' brother.
Oh, yeah.
They did that in one go because that's all they could do. Because they did actual effects. It was gold paints.
Well, it's, yeah, there was so much care and attention put in this. The episode one was filmed twice, which is why it has so many minor inconsistencies. And then we get to eight. Hey,
shoot
guys,
once. Put it on the board. We're good to go.
I'm gonna run a roleplay game, guys. But I'm gonna take a year off from Module 7 before running Module 8 because I want to get it right. And then we get this.
Yeah,
it's like an 8-part module series. And, you know, the first 6 modules are all 10 parts of the module run correctly. The 7th one, you can tell the GM's not quite feeling it. GM's like, look, I'm having a bad time. But you know what? When we run the last module in the series, it is going to be fucking tight. Legit. And then he pulls out 40% of the material and only runs 6 parts of this 8-10-part module and just basically phones in the last fucking game session. He's like, yeah, you guys win. I'll put away your character sheets. We're done. The cripple is the king, even though he's got the greatest story ever, being drug around on the other side of the wall for years on end, only to treat like the people who are nice to him as a complete dick.
And, you know, that's another part of it is Sam had a better story. He actually journeyed to the other side of the wall. He rescued a lady and her child. He killed he was the first one to kill a White Walker in centuries.
Just, Sam was kind of awesome when they started out with him, but
He tapered off.
He really did taper off on many parts, and the big part that I had a problem with Sam is the fact that everything he did was accidental. You know, he found out John's lineage because he stole some books because he was curious. It just happened to be the right books to pick up. He killed the White Walker by finding Dragonglass just at the right time. It's so much convenience. And then they have the big-ass battle, which we can barely see.
Yeah.
And every time somebody gets killed, they're getting killed because they're helping Sam stay alive. He's like a complete... why is he on the fucking battlefield?
I think a good rule of thumb that I heard, I forget where, so unfortunately I can't credit, but you can only use coincidence to get characters into trouble, never to solve anything.
Well, he solved a lot through coincidence.
Yeah, and that's bad, because It only really works, and people won't be questioning it or suspicious if it gets into trouble, because that's more like life. That's more chance, you know.
So I don't necessarily agree with that entirely, but if you're going to solve a problem with coincidence, the character has to be able to solve additional problems without it. You have to establish that they're competent before establishing that they're lucky.
True.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of writing errors. As a storyteller, there was so many inconsistencies and errors. It was like Game of NPCs near the very end. Like, just to push the story forward, there was so much coincidence or plot armor just to keep things going forward. Characters would die, and it was more for shock value than it was to push the narrative. Early on in the series, when somebody dies, it would push the narrative. Yeah. When Tywin Lannister got shot by his kid, you know, Tyrion's like, "Doop, dad, fuck the patriarchy," or whatever the fuck. It pushed the narrative still. When Renly Baratheon died, it still pushed the narratives. Other characters had character fuel to keep on going from that death. Yeah. And then we get to season 8, and it's like, what's his name? Ed? We don't even really know his name. I think it was Ed.
Edomir?
The Night's Watch dude.
Oh.
Yeah, he comes up, he sees Sam, he's like, "Get off your ass, dude," and gulp, dead. It didn't push any of the narrative. It was just surprise, people die. Meanwhile, the main characters have lots of plot armor because they're ragged, they're tired, they're pushed up against the wall, and they're being dry humped by undead for almost an hour. It just killed the tension. And
that's the worst kind of dry hump. I mean,
yeah,
that's open sores and gangrenous flesh. That's just not a good combo.
Although, one of the scenes in that fucking battle that we need you to get a voiceover for, dude. Like, seriously. Yeah. We need, like, the cut the sound out and just have you do a Solid Snake voice for Arya sneaking through the library. Like, Colonel, there's undead everywhere. What do I do?
Colonel, there's undead everywhere in this library. Maybe if I scream at them as I jump at them to kill them, I'll go unnoticed.
Yeah,
I'm gonna try it.
All that scene was missing was, like, when she threw something, was, like, the exclamation mark appearing over their heads and then turning to look.
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly.
Dun, 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 dun,
it was so fucking video gamey, and I get accused of this a lot when I run a game, as running a game too video gamey-ish. But that, holy fuck, like, her killing of the Night King was a quick time event.
It was.
It was a pure quick time event.
I want to get that footage now and just edit in, like, you know, the little PlayStation buttons.
Yeah, button smashes that you're supposed to
hit
happen.
X, hit triangle, hit circle, square, up, and you killed him.
If you're going to do that, though, you got to edit in the sign of them pushing it. So when she screams, it's like, hit X to stealthily attack, and you miss the button.
Exactly. Yeah, Twisted Minds think alike, dude, because that's exactly what through my head was, like, her leaping through the air, and then suddenly, like, a combo of button smashes, like, straight out of Final Fantasy X, when you're trying to learn how to do the spear shot.
Yeah.
Just, press X, you can't do it. Press Y, you can't do it. Fuck. Yeah, it was so video gaming. Or, like, when the fucking battle happens, Daenerys is burning down King's Landing, you know. You see Arya, like, running through the streets, and then suddenly, like, a pause screen appears, and the Konami code gets entered in, and it's like, invincibility unlocked.
Psycho Mantis appears. Now, put down your controller, and let me show you what I will do to the King's Landing.
Exactly. Or fucking, one that I want to do is, I actually, if I can get a hold of the fucking video of it, is the first time the Clegane's meet during Clegane Bowl, and the mountain is walking down the stairs, is just add in Darth Vader breathing sound effects.
That'd be great.
Because it was totally Clegane Vader.
They did that, and they even did the lightsaber effect over the swords.
Nice. It was like one idea I had was adding in the sound for Neverending Story. At the very end, when he's flying the Luck Dragon down New York and, you know, terrorizing the kids, I'm like, oh, I want to do this. I want to overlay, you know, Sebastian riding around like, I'm a Luck Dragon, with all the music and people screaming. Put that over Daenerys flying over King's Landing. Yeah, I was beaten to that one. I'm not even mad. Not even mad. It's just, season 8 is so fucking memeable for all the wrong reasons. It is.
It really is. I mean, and, like, they had such power and such influence coming into it. They could have been like, you know what? We need an extra $5 million. And everybody would have been like, crowdfund, let's fucking go.
Yeah.
There was so much that the producers and writing staff had on their plate. They could have asked for anything. They could have asked for more seasons to flesh out the story. HBO was like, yes, we will give you more seasons. But they're like, no, we want to move on. But they could have asked for anything. Everything. You know, they could have asked for extra people on set to make sure that Starbucks cups didn't appear.
And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. They wanted to move on. And that's kind of the subtext to season 8, it sounds like.
Yeah, but the way they moved on, look, if I'm at my job, I decide, you know, I'm going to put in my 2 weeks notice. And I do the last week barely putting any effort into my job and just getting worse by the fucking day. Chances are good, not only will they let me go early, chances are really good whatever job I'm going to is going to start getting phone calls saying, this guy is a total twat, don't hire him. There's a good chance that once I start, I mean, yeah, they had the luck to be already signed up with Disney, where franchises go to die.
Yep.
Yeah, they had the luck to already be signed up. But still, even if I already had a job down the street, chances are HR would be on the phone going, yeah, this guy, if he doesn't give a shit, he'll, like, do all sorts of crazy stuff. He'll try to ruin your business from the inside. Yeah, so maybe I want to leave my job, but still, I should leave with a sense of decorum, professionalism, completing the tasks that I normally would do anyway. Yeah, they wanted to move on. They could have still finished their job, because goddammit, the actors fucking did. The set designer sure fucking did. The choreographers still finished their job. Why couldn't the writers? Why could these guys just phone it in while everybody else is still doing 110% until the very last fucking day?
Well,
that shit wouldn't fly in a normal job.
Because they're better than everyone else. They're better than their fans who made this empire. You can create the best show in the damn world. You can create the best fucking movie in the whole goddamn world. If you don't have a fan base, oh well.
Yeah.
And, you know, another topic coming up, and I'm sure you two are going to be very well aware of this because of recent happenings Disney side. When Kit Harington and redhead chick, see, I don't even want to remember her name anymore. Sansa Stark, whatever. When Jon Snow, also known as Aegon Targaryen, sixth of his name, Lord of the Andals, blah, 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 and Sansa Stark. When the actor and actresses turned on the fan base, and started going, oh, no, you're wrong, you know, you didn't get the ending you expected, so you're just going to throw a tantrum, blah, 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 blah. Turning against the fan base is a bad idea. And Kit and
Red, what's her name?
Yeah, what's her name? They should pay fucking attention right now, because not too long ago, another gal did the exact same thing, you know? So they should look at Brie Larson right now and be like, do we really want to talk shit about the people that are giving us money?
Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
No.
Yeah, because so far, it has a really bad track record when you're like, oh, this movie isn't made for you, don't watch it, because people have a tendency not to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember the Ghostbusters film?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Go ahead. Yeah, somebody out there you want to cater to have throw money at you, talk shit about them, go for it. Because that's a good way for Kit and, yeah, number two, to wind up not getting any more work. Especially on this side of the pond.
Or on that side, because they have more avid fans on the other side.
Yeah, they got more avid fans on the other side, but if you start talking smack about people to give you money, fuck them. They can always get more actors and actresses in a studio, besides those two, who have the same amount of charisma to pull in numbers. They may be on a pedestal now, but it's really easy to get knocked off when you start getting all
uppity.
When you get all uppity and start thinking you're King Kong, people stop throwing bananas at you. Because that's what you are, Kit. That's what you are, redheaded lady girl person who I don't even know if Sansa Stark was a character in that last episode. I think she was just playing herself. You know, respect me or fuck off. Basically what she did to her uncle. I'm the queen of the north. Fuck you.
What was that other one you wanted to do? Next words coming out of your mouth better be I'm fucking sorry or we're going to have a big fucking problem.
Yeah, I want to do, like, video game clips and put them over some of the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the Avengers theme, I think it would go really great in a couple of the death scenes, like when Oberyn's head gets exploded. One of the ones, though, is I want to pull out of Saints Row when Sansa tells her uncle to sit down. He's like, next words out of your mouth better be I'm sorry or we got a real fucking problem. Just want to throw that sound clip in there because god damn she was acting so uppity. Yeah, when actors and actresses, you know, they start acting like that and start turning on the fan base, they're gonna find out real fast that the fan base will stop throwing bananas at her dancing monkeys, because that's all these people are. Kit, redheaded girl, you're dancing monkeys. Cope with it. We throw you bananas so you can dance and entertain us. If you start flicking poo, you get less bananas.
Well, yeah, essentially being an actor is just having a job with the world's largest PR department.
Exactly. And I think they also kind of forget, you know, that a lot of us fans, you know, who have been fans of the show, or at least those who aren't, you know, quite fans, but still pay attention, we bought the books, we bought the comics, we bought, paid into the video games, we supported these guys. They're going to figure out pretty quick that the gravy train is run its course.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just my personal thing, I just, sounds melodramatic, but my heart goes out to all the Game of Thrones fans out there, because for someone who wasn't in it, I knew how important this was to so many people, and then just to see this happen to them, it's just, that's just fucking heartbreaking.
At least the normies now know what it feels like to be a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, and yeah. That's one of the most biting insults.
Because when Star Wars started tanking, you know, everybody was like, ah, you just don't like it because it's too progressive, or you're a man baby, or you're a Nazi, or whatever. You know, you're too cisgendered to enjoy Star Wars. And then they do this, the Game of Thrones, which all the normies were liking, and it's like, how does it feel, huh? Mm.
Yeah.
Welcome to the fucking cart ride. Hop on, we're headed to Skyrim.
On that low note, let's get some final thoughts and wrap this one up for the folks.
Yeah, let's wrap this up. I think we should start with our special guest star, because I've railroaded him a lot during this episode.
Well, you guys yeah. got a blanket, you're consenting adults, whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean...
He is cute.
Oh god, we react the same.
A little too in unison there, fellas.
I got a porn track for this.
I was about to say, porn comes out later.
Yeah, that's next week. Next week is porn.
Basically, from a narrative standpoint, it really does feel like they checked out. Well, everyone else gave their all. The writing fell apart. They just wanted to move on to the next gig. It feels like they found something that they thought was better and just jumped ship. Even before they were done with their job. And that is a travesty. That you don't do that to fans. Especially people who have put in as much time as they have. When a show's ran 8 seasons, you need to give a proper send-off.
Yeah, how many years has that show been on?
They skipped a year between 7 and 8, so technically 9 years.
Yeah, that long of an investment, and that's how you send them. That's horrible. I can only imagine if a show, like, granted it's on much less seasons, but, like, can you imagine if, like, Breaking Bad or Sons of Anarchy had pulled shit like that?
Or Star Trek?
Yeah, or Star yeah. Trek. Yeah.
Yeah, Star Trek Next Generation started phoning it in at the ass end.
How
yeah.
about Voyager?
Voyager was phoned in from the fucking beginning. It was lost in space with different uniforms.
Enterprise.
Or Dexter. Oh, wait.
Guys. Ow. Pain.
But that's kind of the point I want to make. The longer a series runs, the more committed people are, the more care you have to give to the ending. And I think that's really all I have to say about it. You just got to respect the fan base.
Yeah, that's very much true. I mean, looking at it from a role-playing point of view, if I was running a game consistently for 8 years in a row, and I had a little bit of a burnout on the 7th year, and I said, look, I'm going to make it great and awesome and super fantabulous, and everything will wrap up next year, to take a year off from gaming, but when I come back, we are just going to hit this shit. It's going to drop faster than a pair of panties at prom night, guys. I better hold up to that promise, because they said that. When they took that year off, they said they were going to make the show everything it could be. If I came back and I was GMing a game and said, that normally clever character, it's like the GM was stonewalling Tyrion the whole way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Tyrion went out of his way to make an intelligent character who was well-built for the campaign, and the last season, the GM was just basically sitting there going, oh, no, you failed your roll. And Tyrion's like, I rolled a 20. He's like, not good enough. You gotta roll a 21.
Well, you know, he just wouldn't let go of that sword.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm going to hold you to that drop in the panty comment.
Pachow!
Careful, he has a kilt.
What about you, Monica? Final thoughts?
My final thoughts, just what I already said, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry that happened to you. Welcome to come join us, burnt out Star Wars fans. We have snacks and pamphlets.
And if you come to 10 meetings, you get a decoder ring.
Yeah, for real.
You can learn Arabesh at home.
Yeah.
Well, for my final thought, I gotta say our only saving grace is that when the box set comes out, if you really want to pay for it, there are multiple endings, and one where Bran's the bad guy, although I totally thought he was at the canonical ending. But hey, you know what? There's better shows coming up on the Rising. I have no idea what the fuck they are, but you know what? Watch the Orville, motherfuckers, Season 3.
Orville Season 3 gives me a little bit of hope, but my final thoughts is everybody's going to be taking a huge fucking break from now on. I think nerd culture is going to...
fall out of vogue?
It's going to go on back burner a little bit more than what we've seen in the last decade, because we've had Game of Thrones, a fantastic, awesome, epic fucking fantasy series for the last 10 years. We had Star Wars come back to the forefront, and it's been screwed all to hell. The MCU has hit its high point, and there isn't really much that you can do to entertain people now that superhero fatigue is kicking in hardcore. So nerd culture is kind of...
See, I totally would have said that back when Lord of the Rings had finished its last movie.
You know, we'll see.
But, you know, I honestly hope you're right, because I feel like nerd culture needs to step back a bit, because putting it in the limelight like it has, it's kind of taken the stuff that made it special and polished it to a dullness.
Yeah.
In the video game industry, they call that streamlining.
But anyways, we will catch you later, people. This is Darth Blasphemous signing out.
Yep, and you can find this on iTunes, Podbean, YouTube, all sorts of fun, crazy places. Join us next week when we review XXX adult games, because it's Blunt Force Gamers after dark.
All right, peace.
Peace.
See ya.
Love, peace, chicken grease.
Warhammer's better than Star Wars.
You fucking liar.
Hey, you know, I can prove it right now. Characters who are canon in the Star Wars universe: Jar Jar, Admiral Holdo, and Rose Tico.